Previously on The Adventure Zone.
You got groups like the church, the law, that if this town were to become incorporated, they would lose a pretty big handhold in the Crescent Territory.
I loved Jeremiah Blackwell, and he loved Anne.
What is the antidote to despair? Well, my friend, it is action.
Nice to meet you too, Banshee. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's get down to business. I want to help you in this. The spirit that has been occupying the body in front of you leaves it, and the Banshee is gone from the room. So you open the envelope, a key falls out, a house key. You pull out the piece of paper that's in there, and when you turn it over, it simply says, "Don't trust Connors." So do you guys want to know who did it?
I already know. I've already figured it out. I just didn't want to reveal it in episode two.
No, this is a thing you used to do when we played Clue or you watch a movie where you go like, oh, and we'd be like, what? And be like, you'll figure it out.
And
you
I was always right.
No,
I did
once
see
no
that
way.
Solve a Clue game after two rounds
yeah.
of Clues. It was amazing.
I have to think he cheated. I still can't believe
some way he
don't
cheated. Don't reopen this wound, Travis, please.
Okay. So, we just put out episode three, so it's fairly recent. So I don't think we have to go over all the clues again, but so can you guys give me a quick, like, where you're at now, what your plan is? I will say,
can I say something? Let's go over the clues again.
Yeah, I think we at least have an idea now of, like, what is relevant.
Here's the thing I'm struggling with. Unless it is Liam, I don't have any other good suspects.
Well, I think if you want to look at motive, I kind of suspected the sheriff before we got the grim omen from the Banshee, because if the town gets incorporated, the law, I think, loses a foothold in town, right? Like, they,
right.
If they bring in more proper infrastructure and, you know, sort of codify the lowercase L law in town, I think the sheriff loses something, and so that might be a reason why they would commit a murder.
Now, who was the sheriff vouching for so hard last time?
Tommy Knox,
yeah.
So maybe there's a collaboration that was happening there. The thing that makes this case so curious is is how it actually happened. Oh. Somebody knew where Jeremiah and where Dylan was going to be. Somebody killed Jeremiah in the street. I'm assuming with these gloves, although that could be just a big red herring from Travis. And then somehow got them cleaned and back to the house where Liam was staying before we took notice. There's a lot. There's so many question marks still.
I think we need to lock in some things. I think the gloves is a good example. We have had nothing else that has even come close to being a murder weapon. I think every indicator points at the gloves. I say we lock in the glove as the murder weapon.
Unless that's exactly what fucking Travis wants. Well, maybe we'll find something in Sheriff Connor's house. We're about to go get a big clue, I feel like. So
let's go kick open Sheriff Connor's doors.
Wait, was I supposed to be writing this down? Like, what?
Oh,
am I supposed to know what we're doing? Oh, no. I'm making this up as we go along, baby. All right.
Oh, yeah, baby.
What time is it as we make our way to the address listed on the card?
It's about 6 o'clock. I mean, you still got some time. But it's getting there, you know?
Okay. I mean, the best case scenario for me is we don't solve it in time, and then we have some sort of, like, big hero moment at the sheriff's station where we, you know, fend off the whole town, gunslinger style,
just a whole tombstone moment.
Right. You know? This is our justice, etc.
So every town has a story. Dry River has a legend.
Deal in lead, friend. Yeah.
Speaking as someone whose greatest combat ability is not getting hurt by things. It sounds a little bit underwhelming to me. I'd like to crack the case if we could.
All right.
All right. So you're heading to the address on the card with the house key given to you by the Banshee. When you approach the home, it is, in fact, confirm Griffin's suspicions. It is Sheriff Connor's home. About three doors down from the jailhouse.
How many doors down?
Three doors.
Y'all remember that jam? So if it's near the jail, then it's not on Carrion Street then, right?
Correct.
Farts. Okay. I was just saying, like, if there's no bells here, like, I'm fucking useless.
No, but the streets are clear. The windows are dark. You know that the sheriff is still, you left him at the jail. He said he would keep an eye and protect Dylan. So you're fairly confident the house is empty. You know from your intel that Connors lives alone. So you can feel pretty confident about using the key and whatnot without having to worry about repercussions.
Well, we should be cautious, I feel like.
Well, yeah, you're sneaking into somebody's house. I'm just giving you, like, if this was a Quest for Glory game, here's what you know. This is a low stealth check. You know what I mean?
So there's a thing in Let It Out where you extend your senses, supernatural or otherwise,
mm-hmm.
to, like, just do, like, a... I'm trying to, like, figure out a way to, like, use my keen wolf senses to, like, see if there's anyone inside the house or any sort of dangers that we should be aware of.
Do it, baby.
Okay.
I've been listening to too much Magic Tavern. I can't stop.
Okay, that's a 6, which is not great, but plus 1 for spirit, so that's a 7, so it's a hit. So I do mark corruption.
Uh-huh.
Racking that shit up. Oh, no, I'm just at 2, it's fine. And, yeah, I just sort of, like, take a beat, stop my companions, and, like, take a deep sniff, a hard sniff.
So I will say that you do sense some light magical warding on the door. Just kind of think like security system, you know, like, but not since you used your supernatural thing. It doesn't seem to connect to anywhere. More of like this way someone would know if someone had gone in, but it wouldn't necessarily raise an alarm or anything like this. It's fairly common. This idea of, like, there was someone in my house, but it doesn't connect to a more intricate system.
They got that on the window?
Window and door.
So there's no way of going in this house without somebody knowing about it.
Well?
Hey, Gandy, there's a little bit of magic something or other on the doors and windows here into the house.
I have a couple of options. I have a teleport spell.
Okay.
Where I can teleport someone a short distance. It seems to me that would get you past any kind of wards to keep you out.
I mean, you can bamf one of us, right? But then the other two are still going to be on the outside looking.
Augustus floats through the wall.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. Okay, so, all right.
And he looks at everybody from inside through the window. Hello? Yeah.
Hi, Augustus. That's a neat trick. I forgot that's why you were in the big bucks. Gandy, why don't you just pour it on in there, and I'll keep an eye out here.
Very well.
So?
Nice. In channeling, she's channeling. That's a 10.
Do you have to, I don't know how the channeling works,
yes.
But you did it last time and you got 3 hold. Do you not just continue to spend that hold, or is there like a certain amount of time that you have to go between channelings?
I don't know, Trav. Trav,
yeah,
is it?
Sure. When you channel and collect your magics, roll with, I guess you can't channel again this scene. That's what it is. So yeah. It's like scene by scene. So I guess it's a new scene and you can do it again.
Okay, I rolled a 10, so that's...
hold 3.
That's pretty much a hold 3, so Really cool Star Trek kind of effect. Twinkle, twinkle, twinkle. And then I'm inside the room with Augustus.
Okay. I'm going to like walk down the stairs off the porch a bit so as not to arouse suspicion and just sort of keep an eye out down the street.
Okay. Well, I could follow Gandhi and Gus here, but I think instead they'll do whatever. And I'm just going to spend the next hour with Errol on the street. Errol, what are you doing? You know, just looking around, kicking some dirt. Whistling. Oh, no, don't whistle. Draw it. Oh, what am I? Okay, so I go with Gus and Gandhi. So you enter the house. It's, you know, it's dark. There's no candles lit or lanterns. The only thing you get is kind of the ambient. I was going to say moonlight, but here we are. We're near 6 o'clock, so the moon is real low. So you're just getting a little bit of ambient light. Gus, I'm going to say that's probably not so much of a problem for you. Gandhi, do you have anything that would help you here? I mean, it doesn't even have to be magical. You could always just like light a candle or something.
Knowing Gandhi, if there is an opportunity for something, for a magical answer to an everyday dilemma, I feel like you have some sort of, you know, enchanted mag light.
And so you are correct, sir.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. Excellent.
She has what's called the V-Torque. It's a gold torque she wears around her neck. It's an artifact. And it has a natural ambient light that she can use. And it just kind of suffuses the general area around her and Augustus with a warm golden glow.
Mm.
Which goes right through Augustus. And
it's very nice.
Excellent.
Yes.
So as you enter the room... here in, you know, his kind of living quarters, what you see is on the wall, you know, newspaper clippings about his time in kind of more established cities back east, the incorporated territories, where you see a much younger but still clearly Sheriff Connors as a young beat cop in this more established city, which I have not picked a name for, but I'm just going to call it right now the big city, the BC.
That's big with two G's.
Yeah, B-I-G-G, Big the Cat.
And city with two Y's.
City with two Y's. In Big City. And you find newspaper clippings about this young, fresh-faced cop who it seems like was very successful. And then they just kind of stop. You know, and the last you see, a young man, about 25, and then suddenly there's no more newspaper clippings. And that's about all you see here in kind of the, I don't want to say living room, because it's not really that so much. It's just like a chair, you know, a table. It doesn't look super lived in. You kind of get the impression that Sheriff Connors spends most of his time at the sheriff's office. He pretty much only comes back here to eat and sleep.
Is there any more detail in the last newspaper clipping that we found? Anything at all that would indicate what happened?
And then he turned evil.
Yeah.
Beep cop goes bad.
Well, if something bad happened, he messed up or something, that would kind of explain why he has been, you know, exiled to this place.
The last story you can see is about Connor's making the arrest of a low-level enforcer for a crime family in the big city.
Okay. What's the enforcer's name?
The enforcer's name is...
Flint Chittles.
Flint Chittles.
whoa. Okay, that's amazing. Because I didn't think... It all ties back.
It
ties together.
let me see. I'll give you that name in a moment. Once I look at Twitter...
So it's not Flint Chittles.
It's not Flint Chittles.
That was some good storytelling on my part.
I
would just say amazing memory on Dad's part.
I just don't recall who Flint Chittles was.
He runs one of the mining companies, or I guess is the manager.
I thought it had something to do with the Augustus Parsons cash.
Yeah, they own the mining company and secured the land from Augustus Parsons.
Ah, right.
The name is Bishop. Named after listener Holly Bishop on Twitter. Thank you for tweeting about the show. Bishop. He was a low-level enforcer for a crime family in the big city. It doesn't mention what crime family. It's not even a big article. It seems to be kind of a two paragraph, maybe buried on like, you know, page five of the newspaper kind of deal.
So a dead end.
I'm going to extend my senses. I, too, can let it out with my ghostly powers.
So I keep wanting to sing Let It Go, and I want you all to appreciate that I haven't yet.
Thank you,
Well,
Travis.
Considering it's Let It Out, that is admirable or straight out. No, okay, well, all right.
I've done it. I've right, so I'm you are my puppet, Father.
That's a, what is that, 8 plus spirit, which I'm a ghost, so that's 2. So it's a 10.
So you can choose 2 effects or take 1 and no corruption. And I bet I know which one you're going to do.
I'm going to ignore the corruption. And
whoa, never mind. I was wrong.
Just kidding. I'm going to extend my senses, supernatural otherwise, and I'm going to take 1 forward on my next roll.
Okay. You feel 2 powerful sources, both of them coming from the direction upstairs, one about, I would say, at least twice, if not more powerful than the other, but both seem to be going away from kind of his living area and kitchenette, and heading upstairs.
Okay, I'm going to float upstairs then.
Hey, what's going on outside?
Well, it's a good question. What does Errol see? First of all, I will say that maybe Errol can see a little bit of that golden glow, just a little bit, but enough that, you know, it ain't something you're crazy about seeing there in the window. It ain't exactly low profile, but the street is still fairly empty. You hear, you know, rustling. You can see some lights in windows further down the street, but there's no one out at this time.
If I see lights in windows, am I assuming that people are starting to wake up?
Oh, yeah.
Farts.
I mean, far down the street, you can see the worker housing. It's starting to light up. You know, you still have a while. The shift, it doesn't start at the mine for a while.
Okay.
But it's getting there. Tell me, how's Errol feeling?
I was going upstairs to look at the super magic clues, and we're really getting B-roll right now? Like, this is what we're doing?
I'll be quick. I'm feeling nervous.
Okay. So as you float upstairs, you reach what is clearly Connor's bedroom, and you see in a corner something that you are not surprised to see, and that is a shrine to, one moment, I've lost my notes.
Jesus?
A shrine to Jesus.
Dear Jesus, give me the power I need to do all the good crime busting today. Help me get all the good clues, Jeezy, and...
You see a shrine to Limdefell, who you know is the kind of demonic presence that the law, capital T, capital L, was founded by the worshippers of Limdefell. It's the order. What you know from just general intel is the followers of Limdefell, the law, believe in power through order. Now, what you weren't expecting to see is the whole shrine seems to be covered in like a fairly fine but clear layer of dust. There is, as with most shrines you've seen, a book laid open. This is how the followers tend to communicate with the people they worship and follow. But the book is burned out through the center. And on investigation, it's clear that the fire kind of it seems that the fire, whatever burned it out, was from the middle of the book and not from outside in. And that is the less powerful supernatural presence or power you're feeling. There is a closet, and that's where you feel the more powerful supernatural power.
Now, Gandhi, my impulse is to see what is inside the closet. Would you like to open the door to the closet, or would you like me to just sort of duck in there?
I have a very strange feeling, but I'm afraid that if it's magical in origin, It might even harm you. How about if I cast shielding?
Yes,
to protect us, to protect us both before we open the closet.
Yes, I believe a bit of prestidigitation is indeed called for.
Okay, so she casts shielding, which comes off another one of her artifacts. She's got this jet carved bracelet around her wrist, which would be a good place for a bracelet.
Yes.
Do I need to roll anything?
No. So you still have your two. You still have two holds left.
I still have two holds. One hold left. No, I used one.
You have.
Oh no! It rolled up again. Okay. So I have two holds left. So I'm going to use this shielding. And
now, if you want to shield everybody in a small area, that's your last two holds. Just so you know.
Right. That's right. I use two holds to provide plus one armor to everybody in a small area, and that includes myself, and it's me and Augustus. Right.
Correct.
Yep.
Okay. So I cast this shielding. And then she reaches out and opens the closet door.
It's a good thing you cast that shielding, because what is released from the closet is a blast of wild magic. And what you see inside is a second shrine, this one very clearly actively being used. Let's do a face to a name. Or name to a face.
Wait, did Dad protect us with his shielding spell?
Yeah.
Dad.
What? That was effective magic.
Dad, you used magic effectively.
And now I have learned the true lesson.
Whoa, Dad is glowing magic. And he's floating into the sky. Goodbye, Dad. You did it.
I will look down upon you from the heavens.
Goodbye, our Dad.
Goodbye.
This is all Dad is waiting for.
Goodbye, Dorothy.
Goodbye, Dad.
Thank you
for
listening
to the last episode of The Adventure Zone.
did I hear that from the street?
I will say maybe like the second floor windows kind of rattled a little bit. Okay. Definitely not like crazy, but like you look up and you see like a little kind of maybe swell in the glow you could have already seen up there, and the windows rattle a bit. So Gandy and Gus, maybe give me a name to a face kind of role here. I think that will. I'm trying to think of a way that you would identify the shrine, and I think that's what would make
sense. Is that one of Gandy's moves? I don't see it on this.
It's
list.
It's a faction move. So you just roll 2d6.
Okay. 5 and 3. Do I add anything to it?
That's an 8.
You roll with faction right now. I don't think we know what the faction. Okay. If it's power. A god, it may power. Okay.
Oh, no, sorry. It is wild.
You know what? I got a plus one to wild, and I rolled a 9, so I got a 10.
8, and then my power faction is 2.
It's wild.
That's okay, because Gus knows this through all of your ghostly learnings. You recognize this as a shrine to Omdefell, who is Limdefell's brother. Omdefell, you know, is the demonic presence whose worshippers believe in power through chaos. It's Omdefell is the far wilder, less predictable, far more dark sibling of Limdefell. And sitting on that shrine is a similar book to the one that you saw on Limdefell's shrine, but this one is not burned out. It's just sitting there waiting for you to open it.
No, thank you.
I've got to read it. Gandy has to look at it. That's her whole driving thing.
Out of the corner of her eye, Gandy notices that Gus is like floating down through the floor. Oh, no. It's happening again. This is embarrassing. And then he's gone.
So, Gandy, you're going to open the book? Yes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So when you touch the cover of the book, it springs open. But that's, here's the thing, normal for this kind of shrine communication. And what you see is the last communication that happened between Connors and Omdefell. And on the left-hand page is written in fairly normal handwriting, "What are your orders?" And on the right-hand page, in a far more scrawly, jerky handwriting, is "Stop the deal, no matter what."
I think it might be a clue, guys.
It does feel that way to me.
My gut is telling me we're in Clue Town.
All right. Gus floats back up. Well, what did you find?
I think it's a clue.
Very good.
I think the note about the sheriff, not trusting the sheriff, was really on the nosy.
All right. Well, it seems that the sheriff is attempting to sow unrest by killing young Blackwell.
Then I think you better go bust his ass, Augustus.
Well, we could all do it, yeah?
Yes, you're a wizard with apparently infinity. You're just like a...
It does seem that way, doesn't
dollar
it?
...dollar store of, like, woo! Magical trinkets just jingling off of you. Here's a list of my superpowers. Am a ghost. Have ghost cashews. Those are my two big things.
We need to go tell Errol, and we need to go finish this.
Yes, let's report back to Errol. Gandy, are you going to take the book with you?
Oh, absolutely. You have any idea what it would be like to be able to communicate with this entity on a regular basis, answer the questions of life and death, and maybe even get some penmanship tips, because this is really bad cursive here.
Being able to communicate with a demonic presence every moment of every day? Yes, Gandy. I, too, have Twitter.
Topical.
Topical humor.
To cut back...
And what is Twitter, you might be asking? Well, in this world, just pretend
that he had a good answer there.
Fantasy Twitter.
It's a big bag of 140 birds that everybody carries with
them. 280 birds now.
That's it's, too many
double
birds.
The amount of birds. It's a great weight.
Tell each bird a character.
Back out on the streets. Errol, you hear the shuffling of footsteps behind you.
Behind me towards the house or behind me down the street?
Down the street. And you turn, and there's Sheriff Connors. And Sheriff Connors sees Gus and Gandy, I assume, coming out of the house.
We got your book!
And he sees the book and says, well, shit. So it looks like maybe... an explanation's in order. Why don't y'all come back to the jail with me? I can explain everything.
We could also just sort of do this right here. I would also be curious to hear what's in that there book.
Well, if y'all would just trust me for a second, I'd rather not draw attention to us here on the street. If you know people are starting to wake up, and if you want to keep Dylan safe, I think we need to head back to the jailhouse.
I mean... Thinking about it, us killing the sheriff of this town in the middle of the street, even if he's a bad guy, is probably optics-wise not great. So maybe we should try to do this in private. No matter what this confrontation looks like, it would probably be better to do it without onlookers.
And if we get the Grayson internal affairs people involved, that's going to be forever.
Oh, there's so much paperwork.
All the reports. Jeez.
So, you follow him back to the jailhouse, he walks in, and the first thing he does is he takes out his gun and lays it on his desk, and he takes strapped to his calf, a long dagger. It looks to be kind of a repurposed bayonet, very long, very thin. He lays that on his desk as well, kind of a, like, no threat going on here kind of deal, you know what I mean? I'm taking my weapons out. And let's say, Gandy, with your experience with magical artifacts, so with the both gun and dagger, the gun is very polished silver with a black onyx handle, and it's not actually silver. You would make a gun out of silver, but it's a polished, you know what I mean, highly polished metal.
Sure.
The dagger, on the other hand, does have running through the center of it from the cross guard to almost the point, a thin line of silver. Both of them share similar sigils that Gandy, you know, are magically imbue these weapons so that they are effective against all manner of beings, be they corporeal or incorporeal. fae or power or human or knight or whatever. And these are very common artifacts used by the law that allows them to effectively enforce the law without having to worry about facing creatures more powerful than themselves.
Dagger OP. Dagger OP, please nerf.
I think that Gandhi also flicks her wrists and the two matching derringers of hers come out of her sleeves.
Whoa.
That she's had, that she established in the first episode, takes them and puts them on the table right next to the sheriff's weapons.
I'm going to keep my revolver. I'm great with that.
Augustus reaches into his pocket and takes out his spectral cashews and puts them on the table.
All right.
And they go right through it.
Yeah. Prop comedy, I told
and
you.
And he says, aw, nuts.
Aw, nuts.
Cashews just go right through me.
Getting nuts.
So, seems like maybe we need to have a conversation, huh? Don't worry about the boy. And he's asleep. No reason to wake him for this. So this looks bad, huh?
Hmm.
It doesn't look good.
Let me tell y'all a story. Story about a young man who believed in right and wrong. Who believed in justice. Thought he could make a difference. That young man.
Was it you?
I mean, yes, but that's a far less, a less interesting way, but all right. It was me. When I started,
I thought it might have been you.
When I started as a cop, I thought I could change, but there's so much, not just red tape, but corruption. People for whom money was more important than right and wrong and justice. And I was just beginning to make a difference, shutting down families that were hurting people, that were doing wrong. And then my commanding officer told me to drop it, to let it go, to be satisfied with what I had done and move on to other things. And I did a little digging, and it turned out that my CEO was getting paid off by the family. And when I tried to confront it, they tried to transfer me, and I walked away. And I came out here to where I could make a difference without having to answer to anybody but myself. And I've worked hard for the last 30 years to try to change things here. And you can't imagine what this town was like when I got here. It was constant bloodshed. And over the last couple of years, I've seen this town heading that way again. And I'm not going to let bureaucracy come in here. I'm not going to let red tape come in here. I'm not going to let corruption come in here and stop me from making this place better. And so, yes, I realized that order wasn't what the Crescent Territory needed anymore. And things had to be done. And listen, I'm not proud of the decisions I've made. But it's what had to be done to keep people safe. Do you understand that?
Sheriff, did you kill Jeremiah Blackwell?
Yes.
Well, we can sit here and swap sentences and pontificate on the relative morality of that decision. But I do need to know, are you going to let this boy go?
Absolutely. Listen, I can't. This wasn't supposed to go down like this. And he reaches into his desk and he pulls out another set of diggers, another set of gloves. I took these off Liam a while back. And they're coated in blood. This is what I used. My plan was to track all this back to Liam. Dylan wasn't supposed to be there. And so, listen, you have to believe me. No matter what, even if y'all hadn't shown up tonight, this was never going to track back to Dylan.
here's Liam's the head of the workers. I pin this on him. Now the fangs and the furs don't trust the workers. A fur killed a fang. Now the fangs don't trust the furs don't trust the fangs. We create chaos. Law steps in. I calm everything down. Right? We work again to rebuild. We make this town strong. We don't need... Listen, there's money here in this town from the copper and from the silver. And Mr. Parsons, you should know better than anybody. When the government steps in and you have to pay taxes and you have to pay politicians, and suddenly your money isn't your own anymore. That's not what this town needs.
I got a question for you, Sheriff. Why did you bring us on? You had to know if we investigated this case, we could have figured out what you did.
Well, I could tell you that I was hoping you'd pin it on Liam. And I could tell you that I was hoping you would side with me at the end, but if I'm being honest, when I planned this, I thought you were coming tomorrow.
Then that would have cost two innocent people their lives, correct? Better, Jeremiah and Liam.
Better than a whole town. Don't you understand? This town is dying, and incorporating is its death knell. If you want to save a body, sometimes you have to amputate. You can't save everyone.
I know all about death. I've learned so much about death, and I know that you placing such lack of emphasis on the deaths of two young men, that's not your decision to make.
So whose is it? Who's in charge here? Because from my standpoint, it's me. I've been saving this town for 30 years. Are you really going to step in here and tell me you would know better, or that anyone would know better? You aren't here. You don't know.
You are entitled to whatever feelings that you wish to have. My feeling currently is this. I do not wish Mr. Mathis to spend any more time in his cell, and I hope before we continue our conversation you can release him. If you wish to place yourself in the cell, that is your decision, of course, but otherwise I trust that you will stay here.
Well, as I see it, we got two options.
Well, let's hear them, but do make it quick. I've made my preferences known.
Option one, Dylan goes free, of course. We pin this on Liam. We both, you know, step forward. You present your evidence against Liam. I present the gloves. And everything moves forward as planned. The town survives. Option two, Dylan goes free. You take me into custody, and this town falls into the hands of corruption and bureaucracy, and they don't trust law anymore. They don't know right from wrong anymore, and there's no one left to guide them.
I was hoping one of the options would be like a cool gunfight with the sheriff.
Yes.
Knife fight, even. Even a knife fight.
That would have been even cool, too, I think.
You have to understand something, Sheriff. Our primary goal is to accomplish this job. We were hired to come in here and prove Dylan Mathis's innocence and to free him from the cell. I can't speak for the other two, but I personally don't care about all the rest. And if Dylan is not out of that cell, then we haven't accomplished our mission.
Either way, boy goes free. You don't have to worry about Dylan.
Sheriff, you may find this hard to believe, but we're speaking the same language here. Last thing I want is for outside interests to come in and force themselves on Carrion Street, change their way of life. We like the way we live on Carrion Street. But if that means living with your justice, if that means locking up innocent folks, if that means killing boys in the street, why are we having this fucking conversation? You killed a boy in the street, and I draw on him and say, Sheriff Connors, you're under arrest for the murder of Jeremiah Blackwell. Can we do that? I turn to the, can we do this? Are we allowed to, like, arrest folks?
Hell yeah!
There's no, I mean, there's no sheriff anymore, so I guess.
Well, I sure was hoping this would go different. And smoke starts curling from his nostrils, and his eyes start to go yellow. His skin goes purple and chitinous, and he grows about 8 inches, and he reaches around and grabs his gun and knife.
Hey everybody, this is Griffin McElroy, your best bud, your best friend, and your best pal. Thanks for listening to the fourth and final episode of the Adventure Zone Dust. We hope you have enjoyed it. We hope you enjoy the conclusion that's going to come up here after this break. I want to tell you all about the shades of magic. There's like purple and brown, and there's some blue. A book series, actually. And this series is available now wherever books are sold. Visit darker-shade.com to read excerpts. For more books, you can follow the publisher at Tor Books. That's T-O-R-B-O-O-K-S. This book recommendation is brought to you by Tor Books. If you're a fan of adventures traversing parallel worlds, don't miss A Darker Shade of Magic by bestselling author V.E. Schwab. Kel is one of the last Antari, magicians with a rare ability to travel between parallel Londons, red, gray, white, and, once upon a time, black. Perilous magic is afoot, and treachery lurks at every turn. Meanwhile, Lila Bard, a thief with grander ambitions, is about to find out magic is very, very real. That sounds like a pretty rad idea for a book. It sounds like a rad book in general. And you can find it at darker-shade.com. Or maybe it's a dash. Which one's the short one? I think hyphen. Darker-shade.com to read some excerpts. I also want to tell you about a podcast called 6 Feets Under, and that's F-E-A-T-S, and that's a very, very good name for a podcast. Check out 6 Feets Under, an LGBT-friendly actual play podcast focused on games that aren't that big one. We've got 2 campaigns going on right now, Mouse Guard, a story of 7 brave mice among 2 patrols who are making the territories a better place, and Fellowship, To Winter's End, a story of 4 unusual outcasts finding out what it means to be a hero. You can find us on Twitter at 6 Feets Under, on our website at www.6feetsunder.com, or on Patreon at patreon.com/feets. And again, that's F-E-A-T-S. Don't look for feats, F-E-E-T-S. That, I mean, unless you want to, but that's not going to be this really cool sounding thing. So again, 6feetsunder.com. I want to thank everybody who's been tweeting about the show using the DAZNcast hashtag. If you do that, you might end up as a character on the show in future stuff. Again, this is the last episode of Dust, so whatever comes next, that's something that we're going to keep trying to do. So please spread the word. We really appreciate it. We don't pay to advertise at all, so you telling your friends and anyone who falls under the thrall of your voice is the only way that we get new listeners, and we appreciate you so much. I think that's it. Sorry that took so long. We're going to get back to the climax of the Adventure Zone Dust. And once again, no full episode next week, but we'll be back with a special announcement next Thursday, so we will talk to you then. Bye. Now, hold up a minute there, Sparky.
He cocks his gun. He points the gun at Gandy.
I'm going to roll to mislead, distract, or trick. Mainly, I'm gonna try to distract. Connors. So he'll look behind himself, and that's oh shit, nice. I rolled a 9. So I have a 0 in mind. So 9. And I could pick 2, create an opportunity, and confuse them for some time.
So describe to me what you are doing to do this. How are you distracting him?
I turn invisible, and I chuck something behind his head so he looks behind himself just for a moment.
Okay.
I throw something off the desk, like the spectral cashews or something, because they were material for a moment because I was material for a moment because I became invisible, so they became physical and
now
invisible.
The ramifications of that are wild, that you get energy cannot be created or destroyed, and yet somehow Augustus Parsons can generate cashews from the ether.
Right. Infinite.
Like, we could use this to solve, like,
world hunger.
The energy crisis, global hunger.
Yeah, it's amazing. These amazing ghostly cashews. So while he's distracted, and I'm now invisible, what you all see is Gandhi's glasses float off of her face and out the door.
Okay.
And Connors turns back, points his knife at you, Errol, the gun at Gandhi. And I'm going to say he fires at Gandhi.
Okay.
Can I take a bullet? Is that too... Is that too much?
You can do whatever the fuck you want, son.
Yeah, I definitely jump in the way of the bullet. Should I roll to, like, actually attempt this feat, or...
Yeah, so give me a roll. What would it be? How would you define it?
I mean, I think probably... so there's like an assistance move, a lend a hand.
Uh-huh.
But that's like to give them a bonus on a roll. There's one called keep your cool, which is just like doing something in a tense situation.
Yeah.
I think it's probably
that. Roll for that one.
That is another six, plus one, seven. So on a 7 and 9, on a 10 plus, all's well. On a 7 and 9, the MC will tell you what it's going to cost you.
Okay, cool. So we're going to say that your move was trying to knock Gandhi out of the way. And what you end up doing is taking the bullet. So the gun is naturally two harm, and in demon form, Connors inflicts plus one harm, so it would be three harm.
Oh, Jesus. Okay, I have two natural armor because I'm a cool wolf, half wolf man. So so would that just be faint harm then? I mark that?
Yeah, you're going to have one harm, so yes. Light harm.
But a hole in my cool jacket.
Hole in your cool jacket. And I will say you also, because you did like that sweet diving move, you were also like on the ground, you know?
Sure, yeah.
Okay, Gandhi, she grabs up the derringers from the table almost instinctually and fires. Now, the derringers do one harm each, so two harm. Eight.
Okay, and also in demon mode, Connors gets a plus one armor, so it's going to be one harm for that. And because you had to get to the desk to grab the derringers, I'm going to say that you are in range. So he takes a swipe at you with that dagger, and that would be two harm. Do you have any armor?
Well, would the shield still be in effect?
No, this is a different scene.
No armor.
Okay, then I'm going to say you take a healthy cut across your bicep. It begins bleeding, and you kind of feel your arm getting cold. And you find it kind of hard to work your right hand.
So okay. How do these boxes harm Bar? Oh, this is the first like fight we've had in this arc. So if she takes two harm, that's the faint box marked, and then one of the grievous, which is like the next level of harm up, or
correct.
Two of the grievous.
So okay. Well, yeah, I believe it's one faint and then one grievous.
So I'm halfway through grievous.
You're halfway through general grievous, yes.
Can I do something real quick?
Yes.
I roll onto my back from the, because I'm sort of laying on the floor after taking that bullet, and I lean upwards and I shoot the lock off of Dylan's cage.
Okay. So here's the thing about werewolves. The closer you get to the full moon, the more powerful they are. And the higher the moon is in the sky, the more powerful they are, and the easier it is for them to transform and to harness that power. So on the days before and after the full moon, it's harder for them to channel it. And it's especially closer to sunset or sunrise, the harder it is for them to channel it. The amount of energy, the amount of emotion that it takes to harness that full power at those times, it's almost unheard of. So when the now hulking figure of Dylan Mathis cannonballs through his cell door, you get the impression he's pretty goddamn pissed. He charges at Connors. Connors goes to turn the gun on him, but before he can, Dylan grabs his hand and you hear a crunch, and you're not sure if that's Connor's bones or the gun or what, but the two of them are kind of locked together there, and Dylan drives him up against the wall with his hand on Connor's throat. Connors buries that dagger into Dylan's ribs, but whether through adrenaline or just sheer force of will, doesn't seem to have much effect on Dylan. There's a slight grimace, but he doesn't let go of Connor's throat, and he just stares Connor's in his yellow eyes and says, "You hurt Jeremiah." And Connor's is gasping, "You took Jeremiah from me. You took Jeremiah from Anne." And Connor's gasping says, "Mercy, please." And Dylan looks him square in the eye and says, "No." And with that, Dylan reaches down and pulls that dagger from his own ribs and buries it in the heart of Sheriff Connors. So deep, in fact, that it digs into the wall behind him, pinning his lifeless body there.
How does Dylan look right now?
So as now that his task is complete, the adrenaline is wearing off, he begins to revert back to human form, and as though it is just now hitting him, his hand goes to his ribs and comes away coated in blood. And he stumbles back and falls to his knees. He's in a bad way, but it's not an immediate killing blow.
Okay. As he's transforming, I think, like, wolf to wolf, I say, "Nope, Dylan, stay angry. You're going to be able to survive that thing if you stay in your wolf form. If you transform back to human." Dylan, I kind of like slap him, and my claws kind of scratch him across the face a little bit. I'm trying to keep Dylan like fucking pissed off until we can like get him to a surgeon or whatever. Yep, bud, that's good. Think about what you lost. Yep, you got your vengeance, but there's still lots of reasons to be pissed off in this world. Yep. And I say, "Gandy, I'm going to get him to a surgeon. I guess keep watch here and not clean up, because the sheriff is pinned to the wall, and that's a mess that's probably more than one person's capable of handling, but I got to save this boy."
And when you open the door, Errol, let's say the noise has drawn attention. Light is breaking over the tops of the buildings, and you've garnered a bit of a crowd. Coming down the street is Deputy Rosa, who you see with a couple who you assume, from the way that they're dressed and the fact that they are with her, are the Blackwells. And Deputy Rosa, when she sees Dylan covered in blood, Errol, who has been shot, and hearing the noise and not seeing Connors, her pace quickens, and she runs into the sheriff's office, and you hear a scream from inside, and she comes back out, gun drawn. "What happened? What is going on? What the fuck?"
I believe I might be able to shed some light.
She turns,
on that,
and pointing her gun at you, Augustus, this new sound and appearance.
"That will do you no good. I am, first, allow me to reintroduce myself, just so you know. I am the spectral former
he
Augustus.
He is bleeding
Sparsons.
Out, Augustus. If you could skip the intro this time."
"Fair enough." "This is my associate's associate, friend of a friend, associate of associate, Uncle Oni. And I believe, Uncle Oni, I gave you the spectacles. Could you inform Deputy Rosa of the situation we find ourselves in?
I certainly can. Gandhi, would you like me to?
Please do so, Uncle Oni. I love it when you get a chance to show
up. Oh, I'm so glad I could help. Just the agreement from you.
It's the second, yes. It's the second one, yes.
No, this goes beyond question. It seems you very much need this. Are we in agreement?
Yes, Uncle Oni, especially since I have something that you're absolutely going to love.
Okay, but you are going to take a corruption point there, the Gandhi.
Okay.
And with that, Uncle Oni places the spectacles on his nose and closes his eyes and projected, we'll say, is a sheen, a circle of magic whereon projects the whole scene.
Onto the side of the sheriff station. The symbolism of that is fucking tasty as hell.
And you hear Joseph Blackwell say, "God bless it. This is as you might imagine, a lot to process." The boy, Tommy, and a man wearing similar pince-nez, or however we agreed to pronounce it, but
pince-nez,
tinted black, with, he looks far too young to have hair as gray as he does, but he steps up. Yes? See to the boy. Help get him to the dock. And I assume, Errol, you go with. Or let's say Abigail steps up and kind of ducks under the arm you're kind of holding up.
Yeah, I think I just give her a nod and hand her son.
And Abigail and Tommy take him to the doctor. And Michael, seemingly out of nowhere, steps up to you, Errol, and looks you in the eye and says, "The boy will live. Yes. You've done a good job, Mr. Ryehouse. I think that there's a scene inside the office I should see to."
To be honest, I don't care if his spirit goes into a fucking toilet, bud, but you do your job.
Yes, probably best if this one ends in cremation, don't you think?
Yeah, burn it.
And Blackwell steps up. What? You have to forgive me, it's quite a bit of information to process all at once. What the fuck is going on? And Anne steps up. I think I can clear a lot of this up, Mr. Blackwell. Jeremiah was killed tonight. And you see Mrs. Blackwell just put a hand to her mouth, and suddenly Joseph can look nowhere other than the face of Anne Mathis. Anne, what happened? Well, as I think you saw, Mr. Blackwell, he was the victim of a much larger conspiracy. You should also know Jeremiah and I were married a few days ago. Joseph looks her in the eye and asks one question. When my son died, was he happy? And Anne smiles and says, I think so. And they hug.
Gandhi walks over and sidles up next to Uncle Oni and leans down and looks him in the eye. She has this a grin on her face, and she holds out the book of Omdefell and says, "Uncle Oni, look, a book that lets us directly talk to chaos demons. We are going to get into some shit."
Oh, yes.
I go inside, and as Michael is
preparing the body and preparing to take it away, I take the badge off his corpse and walk back outside and say, this is something that folks in this world rarely get a chance to actually say, but, and I flick it to Deputy Rosa and I say, there actually is a new sheriff in town.
And she just stares at it. It's not a happy moment, and she seems in shock, but she doesn't put it down. And let's fast forward just a few moments. Things have calmed down. Abigail has come back. Dylan's on the mend. This isn't the first time the doc has seen silver poisoning. And because of your quick thinking, Errol, and keeping that adrenaline flowing, it's going to be all right. And Abigail has told you that, you know, she's wired the Grayson agency, let him know job well done. Payment has been issued to the agency as well, plus a hefty bonus. And Joseph Blackwell approaches you. I can't begin to thank you for a job well done. But I must commission a new job from you.
I mean, I'll talk to my associates. Are you all free? What's the timetable looking like? Y'all got any big plans coming up?
Are you sure he's talking to all three of us?
I think it will take all three of you. With my son and heir gone, I must ask you to journey to Crescent City and convince my daughter to come home.
So far away, but not nearly as far as you might think, in the underbelly of Crescent City, we see a dark doorway. We see a figure shrouded step through that doorway and walk down a dark hallway. They enter a room, and that room appears to be empty. A table, a chair, a lantern, lit but revealing nothing. The figure draws back its shroud, and we recognize Isabella Slate. Isabella Slate says, "You wanted to see me?" And a voice, seemingly from nowhere, familiar but not coming from a body we've heard, says, "Yes. Tell me what you were able to pull from the female wizard." And, unseen by human eyes, the banshee smiles.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture. Artist owned.
Listener supported.
Hey guys, this is Adam Conover. You may know me from my True TV show, Adam Ruins Everything. Well, guess what? Now we're doing a podcast version right here on Maximum Fun. What we do is we take all the interesting, fascinating experts that we talk to for just a couple minutes on the show, and we sit with them for an entire podcast, really going deep and getting into the fascinating details of their work. Find Adam Ruins Everything wherever you get your podcasts or at MaximumFun.org.